Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Bowlology Report. It's a special one today, Bradley Hodge, isn't it? Because the old pro has just waddled into the Bowlology Report to get our numbers up, and we're talking about the great man, Tony Dottomey. Dotters, thanks for joining us today, mate.
It's an absolute pleasure. You know,
I probably won't be, but
this is the pinnacle of my career, I reckon, being
well,
on this report.
Well, it's fair to say we're going to go through your career. So I'm sure
it might be the end of my career. So it could well be the end.
What are your first memories of Tony Dottomey, Bradley Hodge? You, what were you, about 18 or 17 when you debuted with the old pro?
Look, I think the biggest memory for me was when I first was a youngster and we went up to, I think it was Baruga. We had some practice matches there, and I was in the
big budget for preseason
huge. And I was in the. It was the possibles versus the probables, basically the 11 that get selected and those which are absolutely no chance at all. Yeah. I was in the no chance at all. And I happened to come up against Dottomey, Fleming, Rifle and Hughes.
Yes.
And got 450s on the bounce against the probable side. So that's how I got selected. But that was my first memory really of Doddy and just those legends of Victoria.
And he was always very encouraging, I reckon, for young up-and-coming batsmen. I mean, we might get Ricky Ponting on the phone a little bit later because I don't think Rick had ever heard intimidation like that.
Right.
And it's certainly, you made him a great player, didn't you?
Well,
just by those encouraging words down at Hobart when he was about 13.
When he was about 13, and I was probably a crusty old, very frustrated old seamer at that stage, and I might have just said one or two things. Really,
Can you give us one of the more positive remarks that you remember saying to young Rick?
I don't remember too much positivity, actually, from myself but at that time. But he went on, obviously, to become a, you know, and that's probably what...
But he wouldn't have got there without you, Dottie. Hey, mate, can we stop talking about Ricky Ponting and start talking about Tony Dottomey? And we're going straight to the big one. Your Test match debut, right?
Yes.
Against New Zealand, and it's one of the most famous Test matches of all time. You know, it finishes with Mike Whitney blocking out one of the greatest fast bowlers of all time, Sir Richard Hadlee. Mm. But what about, I just remember being I was going to that game to watch, but I remember you sort of come from nowhere to get selected. Was that right?
It was, yes. Basically, I was doing the same thing. I was going to watch. I was literally in the squad as injury cover for Merv, and Mike Whitney was also in the squad as cover for Bruce Reid, who was always injured at that time. So Bruce couldn't even get on the plane. I think he snapped in half at Perth Airport and didn't make it to the plane. So I trained with the team.
So I'd rather be back up for Bruce Reid than Mervyn Hughes, because I reckon I'm going to play.
No doubt.
Yeah, so you're there around the squad.
I'm there around the squad and training for a couple of days beforehand, and... And actually, I remember the pre-match dinner shows how times have changed, was up at the Hilton, which is now the Pullman next to the ground, and
beautiful
barbecue, few beers. I mean, that was basically the match eve team talk, and we're sitting around the pool, and AB, I remember him saying, "Well, look, you know, obviously Bruce isn't here. Whit, good luck for tomorrow." Blah, blah, blah. And he said, "Oh, Dottie, you know, thanks for coming down. Merv looks like he's all right, but you know, come to the ground anyway. See you in the morning. Come and train with us. Spend the day with us." And you know, I thought that was Christmas, which in fact it was. Now I think about it, yeah. So I got there the following morning. First in, first out. Changed out to the nets. The nets were on the ground at that stage in the forward pocket. So they set the nets up, and of course I'm first out there, and I'm bowling away, and all the batsmen came in, had a hit.
You're the just bowlers thinking, let's came give in, them a good hit. Workout. The batsmen.
I'm just taking it all in, and the crowd's coming in, and bowling to the batsmen, and then bowling to the bowlers, and then they finished up and got someone from over the fence to pat up so I could keep bowling. And And so basically I was just there and thinking, right, oh, that's it for the day. And literally Alan Border was going out to toss with Jeff Crowe, and I got to the top of my mark to turn around and bowl again, got a tap on the shoulder and turned around. AB just said, Merv's not going to make it, you're in. And walked off.
So how long did you bowl just, for in the nets?
And he just, I bowled for an hour and a half in the nets.
So in the modern sports science world, you actually would have been ruled out because you exceeded the limit in the
nets. I'd done my loads.
In the warm-up.
I'd done my loads by 10:15 in the morning. And he just walked off and to toss. And I just sort of looked around. And Whit came up to me and said, man, you look blown out. Yeah. And I was, yeah, literally. So first thing I had to do was, of course, is go into the change rooms and change my pants. And
did you have a baggy? Did they give you a baggy?
Literally had to change my underpants as well, because I'd actually crap myself at that. But at that time, you know, I'd no gear at all, and you know, so Ron Steiner, who some of you would know, Ronnie Steiner, is a remained a great mate, and he was working at the ACB at the time, and literally had to run across the road.
Yeah,
the office
on the same street. Yeah,
go down into the dungeon and get out some gear. And, you know, my cap, you know, these days the cap presentations are on the ground and everyone holds hands and sings Kumbaya and has words from a great, you know, of the past or whatever. So my cap presentation was literally as we're walking up onto the ground in the old rooms from down below, Ronnie Steiner comes in the room with a big red face, throws my gear at me and says, good luck. And that was my cap presentation.
So no McGrath, no Ponting. You get your cap from Ronnie Bloody Steiner. We love
great
him.
Man. He's a great man, Ronnie Steiner.
He bows for Hawthorn too.
He does.
Yeah. So, mate, so you bowl first.
So literally, yes, we lose the toss, New Zealand bat. And it was actually in hindsight, it was quite a good thing to do because I had no time at all to get nervous. You know, before I knew it, literally I was standing there at mid-on. Craig McDermott and Mike Whitney opening the bowling, and here I am, you know, just looking down at my chest, and there's an Australian emblem on there.
What about your family?
I had to ring Mum from the change.
Did you get time to ring phones. Mum?
So, yeah, I just got a chance to ring Mum at home and said, look, sorry, I can't come away on the Christmas holiday. I've got to play for Australia. Fair enough. He said, can you get a couple of tickets? I said, I'll try. And they came along and watched, which was great later on. But it was actually brilliant because it was another game of cricket. I hadn't actually had the chance to get myself too nervous. We were bowling, which suited me as well because I didn't have to sit in the rooms and think about it. And before I knew it, you know, it was
first on. First test wicket?
First test wicket was a chap by the name of Phil Horn.
Okay.
Yep. He was Matt Horn's cousin, I think. Yep. You remember Matt Horn.
Yep.
I think actually the wrong Horn got on the plane, in fact. Because Phil was actually badminton champion also of New Zealand, and I think he must have got the wrong ticket.
Well, was there badminton
cross codes?
Was there a badminton tournament on in Melbourne?
Amazing.
At the time?
It could have been. It could have been. So he was my first wicket. He was actually my second wicket as well. So there you go. Actually,
so we can
both
get rid of those. Man.
Yeah, stiff.
Hey, Hodgie, what about on debut though? What did you score on debut, Bradley? Were you a 60 or something?
I got 60. Yeah.
What about
good enough.
Guess what? This man got on debut.
I think it was 68, wasn't it? No, it was
high. I got an even 50.
Even
was two, but
also, you know, FIFA. I actually got six.
So yeah,
six,
don't six, go six, ahead too much.
Sorry,
Tony.
Sorry.
Now, Bradley, you played a bit with the old pro here.
Yeah.
He got his even 50. He was caught Smith Bold Morrison batting at number 9. A little bit low for me. I would have thought for Tony. Guess how many minutes he batted for that 50?
I'd say at least 3.5 days. Only because I've seen him polish that forward defence off in the nets. So
who had the better forward defence? Actually, this is a Twitter. We're going to put this out after this. Who had the better boring forward defence, Tony Dodamate or Jason Gillespie? It's a battle.
Well, probably Gillespie, because look, if you have a look at that, there's a big gap between bat and pad.
No.
That must have been back in the younger days.
No, we'll go back to that.
He must have tightened that one up.
With his little kookaburra there. 243 minutes batting at 9.
That's not bad, is it?
I mean, Dizzy will love you. That puts us unreliable attacking tail enders. That's embarrassing.
Actually, and it was in quite a partnership there, I forget how many it was, with Peter Sounder Sleep. Peter Sleep was a partner. He got 90.
Yeah,
I
was at this day. He batted really well, didn't he?
He did, yes. And Sounder didn't make things too complicated at the time. So the end of over chats with Sounder were really not that strategic.
But like, you know, you might be with, say if you were batting with Dean Jones or Jamie Siddons, you'd be talking about this bowler or you take that one.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Technical
what was Sounder sort of saying?
Santa was just,
You're going to have a beer tonight,
going all
mate.
Right, aren't we? Yeah, I think we just keep going the way we're going. we'll see what happens, really. Okay, good plan.
Well, you got 50. You enjoyed a nice Carlton draft after, I hope so. But what was AB like for your first, going under such a legend, Captain Grumpy? Did he show those traits within these 5 days at the MCG or not?
Look, he wasn't a great communicator with the team. You know, I'd idolised AB, of course, since I was watching him play from the 70s. So I just thought he was king. And he was very much in his own zone, in his own space. And in those days, Bob Simpson, of course, as coach, used to do most of the strategy wise, and dealing with one on one with the players. But didn't say much. AB, as his announcement to me, letting me know wasn't a lot of love there. I said you're in.
You're bowling.
Turn around, walked off, and you're get ready. Yeah,
you're bowling.
Bowl here. We expect this. Righto. Okay.
What about Bob Simpson as coach?
Simo, I thought, was tremendous, particularly for, he's very much managed the relationships one-on-one with the players. But he always had this thing about...
How did you find him for your game? See, I found him a little bit like a computer himself. He actually really spent time on knowing you as a player and advancing you, I thought.
Absolutely. Well, the thing I remember about that, one of which is, I thought getting to national level playing for Australia was like the destination. Wow, I'm here and that's it. That's end of the road. I soon found out that I hardly knew anything about the game at all when playing for Australia. It was almost as if, wow, this is a completely new learning journey. And Simo was just continually challenging, continually offering things. Of course, his fielding sessions were legendary.
Well, it's not surprising that you didn't know a lot under the tutelage of Les Stillman in your early years, but Bob Simpson, I'm amazed by his story, how they were able to turn around that, World Cup success and bring cricket back to where it should be in Australia. I would like to know a little bit more about him because, you mentioned that he's a people's person. It's got to be the cornerstone of coaching and leadership at that top level.
Look, it was at the time, and of course, he was the first coach of the team because previously there was just captains and maybe a team manager.
Manager might help out a little bit, yeah.
And that's about it, but basically there was no other. There was no other sort of... And for a new player coming into the scene, it was really, it was a completely... Could be an overbearing experience for anyone. Mm. But Simo was actually had this knack of actually being quite personable, but also you knew your distance and you knew that you were being challenged the whole time. Yeah. So you were never comfortable with Simo around.
You weren't matey.
Which is exactly what was required. And even from memory, even the senior players were always...
On
their edge, because you could never assume that you were going to, you were always in front of the game. There was always something you needed to do.
I just remember a couple of things. I was always known, I had a rocket arm before having a shoulder reconstruction, and everyone goes, but I used to wind up.
I used to wind up
even in the inner ring.
What was that?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I had the same throwing action from the outfield as I did at mid on. And he was the first person to say, mate, you can't waste time winding up.
Yeah.
You've got to get up like AB and then down. Yeah. So that took me till I was playing for Australia to work that out. Absolutely.
Did you kindly explain to him, though, that many a year had been spent on the fence at Springy South and you didn't get in the ring a lot?
Mate, I'm either slip or fine leg.
Okay.
And you know how many run-outs I got at fine leg? A lot. Do you know how many I got at mid-on? No. Because I was winding up. I ran the third. And then even bowling, one-day cricket, you'd never had any advice.
Yeah.
And he's going, mate, you got to get cover-driven. We're pictured to swing the ball. We don't care if you go... Like, I remember him saying 6 and over. Like, now people laugh at 6 and over. But when we were playing, Don, 6 and over was quite expensive, wasn't
absolutely.
It, with the new ball?
Absolutely.
But he goes, you can go for 6 and over. We need one wicket in that first
spell.
You need
your driving. Yeah, if they're driving at you, everyone's a chance.
So it sounds simple, but that wasn't explained, was it, years ago?
No, it wasn't. So he was always picking things out, and always, there were subtleties in the game. You'd always have something new to keep you on edge and keep you wanting to improve. Well, you needed to improve to stay there.
Yeah.
And everyone was feeling the same. So, I learned a lot.
What about another little thing? Hodgie, I don't know if you faced any of your idols. I missed Dennis Sealy by a couple of years, but you got to face Sir Richard Hadlee, who would have been an idol of yours, surely, as a swing bowler. What was that like? And how good was he?
He was an absolute hero of mine. And I get on well with Richard. He comes to Australia quite often, obviously. But I used to idolise him as a technician as well. He's... In the old VHS days, in the videos, But I used to sit at home.
We're on VHS today. No, we go retro. Yep. He wanted beta, Hodge. I said, mate, it doesn't work.
But these days, with all the film, you've got people to cut up video for you and do this and that. I was sitting at home when the internationals were on Channel 9, literally with the record and stop button and pause button, and I taped all of his spells just to see the way he went about it.
And did you pause and run up and just go that little extra button that went just one little frame at a time? You know, that sort
of
stuff.
When he got to his action and the way he used the crease was incredible. And that was, as a technical, as you said, there wasn't a lot of coaching bowling at that time, so you literally had to choose someone.
Yeah.
For me, that I wanted to emulate, and he was one of them. So to face him in a test match was pretty surreal. And in fact, that the end of that game, you said that
So what was that like? That was insane. Well,
it was one of the best games of cricket beyond the personal type of impact it had. I was pretty good on that game. I must admit, I was very good actually. Let's just read those stats.
Good stats.
But this is the thing. So Whit. He's made millions, hasn't he? He's made absolute millions as a media superstar, as a speaker. I mean, he was, before that game, he was bugger all, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Now, this is part of my marketing, part of my emerging sort of marketing field. I thought, you always want to help out your teammates. What's the best thing I can do to help someone Whit, who's just come off the beaches, Randwick, as a surfer boy from
Sydney. An unknown.
What can I do to help him just establish himself in life? And I thought, the best thing I can do is get out to Richard Hadlee with, half a dozen overs to go. Mm. So Whit comes out, makes a name for himself, and then he'll just explode. You reckon he's thanked me ever since?
Well,
do you think he's actually just recognised? No, nothing.
So you got, how many did he get, Whit?
So Whit took him on. He decided, you might be the greatest fast bowler that's ever played the game. I'm going to take you on. And he scored 2 off 18 balls.
Yeah. Well, it's
and Billy was, Craig McDermott was batting out. He was plumb to Danny Morrison, wasn't he, at the other end?
Absolutely.
Because Danny, 4'2", it's not going over, was it?
No, it wasn't hitting league.
Did you get man of the match?
I didn't, no. Richard,
my God, really?
No, 6 for 50 wasn't enough for them.
Who's voting?
Well, I think the integrity of
it. So who got man of the match? Was it Hadlee?
Just because Hadlee took 10 for the game,
But Hadlee got man of the match. He scored 11 and 29. And what did you get? 7 for 50. I think we need a retrospective we'll get that to you.
Thanks. I did deserve it at the time.
Yeah, Bowlology report. We're doing retrospective book reviews. Why can't we do retrospective man of the matches?
We can do this. No doubt.
He was incredible, and he bowled over 20 overs, I think you'll find, on the last day. So we were chasing 240 on the last day. I got the last wicket in the last morning to give me the 6. And then we had all day to spend to get 240, and we finished, 9 for 230 or something, 220. Mm. So it was a fantastic game of cricket.
And Hodgie, that was the last time New Zealand played a Boxing Day test. The rumours are they're going to do it next summer, and we're ready for it, aren't we? I'd love to see New Zealand take on Australia. It'd be really competitive.
Well, it'd be
crowds.
Awesome. But, Tone, being in administration, probably knows the ins and outs more about trying to get people over to Australia within that time frame, because it is probably a money-making bonanza around that time of year for, especially South Africa, New Zealand. There's a lot of good stuff going on around cricket at that time.
I'm hearing, though, from a New Zealand school dad that his mates are coming for the Boxing Day test.
Oh, well, let's get them here.
Make Christmas and have it. I think we might actually get good support for the Kiwis.
Well, the one thing I love about New Zealand is they're always ultra competitive. And they always feel like they're slightly undermanned against their big brother Australia. But I don't think so in this current environment. I think they could give us a touch-up.
Hey, Dodd.
Kane Richardson. Kane Richardson is one of the best players in the world now, isn't it? And Tim Southee and Trent Bolt. That team in 87-88 was probably one of their best, but this one's not far away. And the best thing about that, guys, this year, is that if they do, I can get a lot of speaking gigs.
Really. Well, you could. Absolutely.
That's what coming on the Bowlology report. We will get you that. I know Sam Harper, we haven't seen him for a week. He didn't get a Shield game. I think he's on the speaking circuit over there in America. Hodge, do you know about his one-day international debut?
I do, actually. I'm pretty sure he got 5 on one-day international
debut. Was it in this one,
Well?
No, it was an earlier version to that. That was about the 92 version, that one. But yes, we went over, and that's in the days when they mixed up the one days and the test matches. So you basically were chopping and changing between formats. And I wasn't originally in the squad for that.
Again.
So this is the common theme.
There's a bit of a theme going here.
Oh, underrated.
And because of that game, basically, I forget if there was an injury or, you know, Merv might have been in the squad as well. And so doing well in the game. And literally we had to go straight from the rooms with a few beers under the belt, I think, straight to Tulla and get the plane that night to Perth. And we sort of arrived in Perth just about the time that F. Scott's opened over there. we were in bed and just
great little pub over there.
But anyway, so we went there for a new. There was I think two or three. It was tri series in those days. We had Sri Lanka and New Zealand again playing. So we were playing Sri Lanka a couple of days later, and
And what AB say, like, not big speech maker. You go, do what you do.
I can't remember anything really that he was saying. Here's the ball,
and
the field.
Well,
and, you know,
it's international cricket. I get five because I'll get a five. But was it like that?
Well, you know, I was used to it by that stage.
So how many people have done that? Are you part of a little club like me?
Do you reckon you get man of the match if you did?
No way. Who took man of the match? Probably some slogging batter that struck it at about 62 runs, 100 balls.
I'm calling Dino.
Hey?
It's not Dino, was it?
Yes, War was man of the match.
What did Tugger do?
With 34 and 3 for.
No way.
Can you believe that? 5 for 21 on debut.
We're getting Tugger next week. We're going to get Tugger on here. And I want him to bring his bloody medallion or whatever he got.
Well, he's a man of statistics. We'll back that up a bit later on. Watch his space, Tony.
But your question, which is a very valid one, of you know, how many actual people in the history of cricket have done that five for on test and one day?
Yes.
I mean, it's rarefied air, isn't it?
So is it you the only one? Are you like me that it's just a golf tournament each?
There's one more.
Who?
There's one more. Fidel Edwards from the West Indies.
Fiting Edwards.
Last time I checked,
he had some licks.
He was fast bowler. Yep,
I think he was the only one. I think there are two of us.
So did he catch up? Have you ever seen him and gone, mate? You know,
I send an invitation every year.
We're like me and Merv. The Australians have taken hat tricks and scored 70s club. You know, two of us, and obviously Warney did that as well. 99. He never turns up. Never turns up.
Well, the 5 from 50 on the bill, of course, is
rare.
Yeah.
Oh, we should join our clubs.
I think we should, yeah.
Potential.
There was one other for Australia, Albert Trott, in 1890-something.
I missed that one.
That was an 8 for it, wasn't it? He got an 8 for Trotty, I reckon.
Don't worry, it's dead time.
It was a good quality 5 for it. Swung it around corners. Or is he a spinner? Don't know.
He ended up playing for England as well. It was a bit like Billy Murdoch, who we talked about last week.
According to Wikipedia, Anthony Ian Christopher Dodemade, born the 5th of October 1963 in Melbourne.
Now, superstar status, but you don't just turn up to the G. I'm going to drink piss now. I'll play a test match, get 6 for it. You had a little. What was your career leading up to getting down to the Bulldog, the Footscray Cricket Club?
Yes, so it probably wasn't as elaborate in the pathway as it is now. So it was pretty traditional of coming up through the club team. So I went down to Footscray when I was probably, I think, you know, 15.
So you just rocked up. Was Hatch, the local boy.
Was Hatch and Dowling on back then?
So you're Hatch and Dowling. So played Hatch Shield for Yarraville, which was the closest thing to me at the time. So it was my first experience on turf. Dowling Shield, then Dowling Shield at Footscray. So I was there. Ken Eastwood was a coach of my local club team. Ken
one test wonder?
One test, who's a lovely, lovely man and still a great mentor and I've indebted to him a lot. So he invited me down. I still remember him coming to Mum and Dad's and sitting in the lounge room and saying, I think it's Tony should come down and try it.
So they actually did that. That would have been awesome to have an Australian player.
Absolutely, yeah. Wow. Yeah, so that's a very good memory. So I went down to Footscray at 15 or so. Another bloke turned up about the same time, was 17, but we'll get to that later.
Well, you can lead into it when you want.
Well, yeah. So come up through the grades at the Bulldogs, and so under-19s was really the only thing in the pathway before the state squad at that stage. So I had a couple of years, 3 years in the under-19s at the Victorian under-19s. Actually, I didn't. First one, as a 17-year-old, I went as an opening batsman in the national championships and didn't bowl the ball.
Good defence, understandable.
If
you've seen it, then that's completely understandable for sure.
So, had 3 years there and was, again, got on in England, played in the Australian under-19s twice, I think. Went to England. in the under 19s.
Who were the stars? And yeah. Craig McDermott.
Actually, I got in by 4 days.
Oh,
you
wow.
talk about being lucky, but the dates we had to be under 19 on the 1st of October at the start of the season. My birthday was the 5th of October. And so I made an England tour in under 19s by 4 days. And Mike Valletta was captain. Craig McDermott was on the trip as a 16, 17 or 17 year old at that stage. Ian Healy was second wicketkeeper and batsman, number four batter at that stage. So Craig Bradley was vice captain of that tour as well.
Didn't know that, Hodge?
Yeah, I didn't know that at all. But
he's a good cricketer.
Pretty impressive.
All right, who was the 17 year old dude at Footscray that you rocked into?
Well, I sort of went down to Footscray around about the same time, and this 17 year old sort of came down. He was a bit unhinged, really, and people will not probably be surprised to know that it was Mervyn Gregory Hughes.
Yeah. So what were you thinking?
Rocked in from Werribee at around about the same time.
What were your impressions of him?
Without a licence.
Driving
at 17.
Year old,
he was without a licence, but he drove down anyway. It was basically wild hair all over the place, bit of a gorilla. I was in the fourths and thirds and he was in the second, so he didn't talk to me for 3 years at the start. Yeah, you don't talk to
him. Yeah, there's a hierarchy for sure.
And he would have bounced, yeah.
Did he roll up in the footy shorts or the stubbies? You know,
yeah, it was
the shorts
stubbies,
did he have on?
Yeah, had the really tight, the Werribee footy shorts because he wanted everyone to know that he played for Werribee.
Yeah, he got his 95 games in there, didn't he?
95 games, yeah. So there's Ruckman and centre half back apparently. Led the goal kicking from centre half back 1 year, so he tells us. But, so it started off probably quite a very long relationship, but I never really got to know him until. Probably we went to England at the same stage when I went on the under-19 tour of England. Merv was on what used to be the old Esso scholarships where young Shield players used to go and play county cricket seconds.
That's a good idea, wasn't it? Yeah.
And he went to play for Essex. And so the last match of our tour was at Chelmsford.
Ah.
And Merv was sort of said, oh, who are you? And I said, oh, I've been playing at the same club as you for the past couple of years, mate. But, my name's Tony. And he said, oh, So we sat at I think an establishment somewhere and long into the night and got to know each other and been great friends ever since.
But, similar sort of bloke.
The way I characterise it really is that I got there 40 years ago at 15, he got there in 17, and I actually grew up, and he didn't.
It's completely opposite.
We can't mount any arguments about that.
No. And in that sitting, what was the ratio of Merv's pints to your pints?
Oh.
Because it would have been pints in England, of course.
Yeah, yes, it was. So 3-1 wouldn't be any, probably would be conservative.
That wouldn't surprise me too much.
No.
I'll tell you who
it was lemonades at that stage.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I'll tell you, man, he probably would have drunk over the years. What about your first state coach, Ian Redpath? How great a man, how big an influence?
Massive influence, and one of the all-time great men, not only cricketers, because... legendary cricketer, and even the people that played with him at the time were just idolised him. Very, of course, if you know Redders, very straight down the line, can't bring himself to swear.
Shite.
Blooming heck.
When we do Shite. Something wrong. Oh, God. That's what about, do you remember what he used to, I'm assuming he did it for everyone, if he thought he gave you some really good advice, do you remember what he'd say after that? You had to keep to yourself. Do you remember what he used to say?
Just keep it under your hat. What was it?
No. Just keep that one under your armpit, eh? Hodge, have you ever heard that before?
Never
He'd
in my
good
life.
He goes, keep that one under the armpit.
Never in my life.
Football.
Never at all.
But the Chapels and Lily and Mark, they just loved him because he was so competitive too, though, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Hated to lose.
Hated to lose. One of the most honest and good-hearted blokes you'd ever meet. And was certainly from that time in Victoria. So I came into the squad at that time as after the 19 tour of England. So I'd done pretty well on the tour and was invited to join the squad. And it was just after retirements of Maxine Walker and Richie Robinson. Yeah. So there were a couple of other very senior players that had left at that stage. And so it was a bit of a rebuilding phase. And Redders was just, the first thing was not to lose. And, of course,
build
it was just getting that resilience and real doggedness about it. Before, and it was actually that base that produced the Merv Hughes, Dean Jones, Simon O'Donnell came through at that stage. Simon Davis played for Australia as well, Jamie Siddons. So there's a core of us that probably came through and eventually, won the Shield in 1999.
And where'd you train? Because, you were a big part in putting together the Junction Oval, which is a great cricket centre now. Where did you train in those days?
Well, in that time, we trained once a week formally, which was on Wednesday nights at the Albert Ground. So Melbourne had the trained on the Tuesday and Thursday.
Yep.
And so the state team, they trained with their club, all of us trained with our club teams 2 nights a week. And then so official state training was on Wednesday night at the Albert. But thereafter, it was basically we begged, borrowed, stole the old indoor nets at the MCG, which was
beautiful, weren't they?
Which was fantastic, you know, with the
cracks halfway down.
Pistol shooting.
You actually physically couldn't see the ball, when you were batting.
No, you couldn't see the ball. It was awful. You had about 3 metres run-ups at that stage. And, of course, at quarter past seven, the pistol shooters came and kicked us all out because that was
I think Reg Hickey actually stepped on my front foot once when he was bowling to me. That's how much he was over the line. And he bowled 100 miles an hour anyway, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. So how'd you get better? Training once a week, you know, with a coach, playing group. Nowadays, you know, playing groups together 5-6 days a week minimum. How do you get better in that environment?
Well, I think you had to really, what you had to do in that time was you had to be more self-reliant, and you had to be really, innovative, perhaps innovative as well, but you had to find ways of learning yourself, you know, and there was coaches that would come in, Redders, Scott Ian, Alan Connolly from Alpel would come Alpel. Once in a while and tell us a few sporties from the old rag doll and, you know, it's like Jordan keeping up with the stumps and all that sort of stuff. But you didn't really have any other coaches.
A lot of it was trial and error, wasn't it? I thought the big improvement for me was going from South Melbourne club cricket to bowling Wednesday night against the best batsmen and you're getting smashed. And then eventually, after a couple of months, I'm just starting to break even here.
There's one little story I do remember, which was Rod Hogg, the great Rodney Hogg, was originally Victorian, played most of his career in South Australia, came back for the last couple of years to play for Victoria. So, of course, the first night he rocks up at the Albert Ground.
He's a resource.
He's a test player. You know, he's myself and Simon Davis and Merv. We've got a test player.
Yeah.
Turns up to the nets in his South Australian tracksuit. And, of course, who's going to go up? So I said, all right, I'll go up. So I went up to him and said, Mr. Hogg. Rod, can I call you Rod? Yeah. Well, you know, we've seen on TV, you know that off-cutter that you bowl, one that really sort of comes back. How do you hold it? You know, how do you hold that? Can you give us a few tips? He gets up close, doesn't he? Listen. I hold the bloody ball like this. If it does something, whoopity whoop. That was it.
That's all. Yeah.
That was it.
The big blue eyes, steely eyes.
Yeah.
Yep.
The steely eyes.
So that was one maybe. Yeah, I probably don't need that too much more here.
You had to be resourceful and you had to learn. You had to, as I said, like Richard Hadlee, and watch players that you admired and pick them apart and train more and harder than anyone else. That's how you got ahead.
It's amazing. Do you think that's lost in this current environment?
I think to an extent, that sort of self-reliance, because at the end, if everything's put on for you and you're basically having to cut back on training or limit the training that you do, in those times, the more you did, the better, because if you were competing with someone else for a spot and you did the same as them, how's that going to work?
No.
How would you going to compete? So you went and had your own nets. You did extra fitness training.
Yep.
You did extra study or, you know, an analysis. You found ways to improve.
And you got confidence out of that too, didn't you?
Yeah,
even if you weren't doing more than your competitor, that's not the point. You believe you are.
Just on fitness, Dottie, you're an extremely gifted athlete and you were fit, aerobically fit.
Oh, yeah.
About the third year into my second or third year in Victoria, the discussion around the coaching group was that I had to get fitter. I trained my ass off to one thing, and that was to beat you around the tan. That was my dream for this summer of cricket. I couldn't bat, I couldn't field, couldn't bowl, but shit me heck, I won the race. I beat him. It was the only loss I reckon he's ever had.
Thought he was 42.
Yeah, I know that.
Got a hamstring at the
time. But I got him.
And a calf.
It was kindly pointed out that I was shit and I couldn't bat, couldn't field and couldn't
run. Now we've got to work on your
But I could run.
Yeah, but I like that still. You want to take it on. And aerobic capacity wasn't a strength of yours, Hodge. You were just getting runs.
Nah.
Hey, you did touch on one. This will be the last one of your career and we'll move on to current stuff.
Yeah.
But you touched on the Junction Oval, Hodgie, and, you know, you did a lot of work, MCC over in England, CEO of the Whacker, some big changes there, and obviously at Cricket Victoria. But where does the Junction Oval getting completed sit with you legacy-wise through your professional career in cricket?
Oh, it's really up there. It's one of the I mean, for me, it's great, very satisfying to see that when I first came into the role at Cricket Victoria, as we said, you know, and you would have trained at so many different places in
so
your
many.
Time in yep. your time with Victoria, both of you, really.
Oh,
so
yeah, Punt Road,
and you're getting shovelled, here and there, and you're getting kicked out of the MCG because there's a concert on or something. Mm. Or
couldn't
other,
do
which,
any fielding, Dodd. No outfielding. No, weren't allowed on the G.
Finding a
weren't allowed.
It's like Scotch College. Yeah. Can't get on the turf.
Had to find a hockey pitch somewhere in the winter
yep.
so we could do a bit of fielding practice. And so when you came into the role and said, okay, what are the big things here that we're missing? And the biggest strategic weakness we had was not having our own operator base. And so to get to that, to put the concept together, you know, to sell a vision here and there, to eventually after a few goes, getting government support back for it as well and finally see it through to completion, it took us 10 years yeah. to do mm. it. But certainly that was one of the real highlights.
And that's certainly a great way note to finish on too. You know,
absolutely, yeah. Just yeah. to get there, and
it's
you know, 11
done.
Years is a long time somewhere, and it was certainly certainly time to finish up and move on. But to see that through to completion was very satisfying. Yeah.
But yeah. Our guide to cricket this week, the Aussies actually won a game, and they may win a series over in India in the yeah. T20. What were your thoughts on that, Hodgie?
Well, it's a short series, but games. A win's a win. We need a win. We haven't had one in a long, long time, apart from Sri Lanka. But that was the fourth grade East Sandringham Sri Lankan 11 that they turned out. So to get one over the Indians in home ground over there would be amazing. I love the fighting spirit of the Aussies in this T20. I mean, the Indians only put on a total of 127.
They were talking about up and down pitch, though.
Yeah, it was in Vizag, I think it was, which is a slow old dusty wicket. But again, I love the Glenn Maxwell factor stepping up to the plate.
So is that just another building block to Maxi reaching his potential?
Look, I think he's such an interesting character that if I was in the coaching staff of Australian cricket, I'd take it on as an exciting project, one that's got super talent. If you can harness that talent and get what you want out of the end result, that's going to be satisfying as a coach for the down track.
Just through the Melbourne Stars, though, I know he had a disappointing dismissal in the final.
Yeah.
But through the series, I thought he captained really well, and some of his innings, the timing of when he decided to go was perfect.
Look, I actually think it's been around for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I think that the maturity in which he's probably trying to find is more off the field than on the field. I think he's honed his game in a little bit. And that dismissal in the final of the Stars versus Renegades was probably something more of panic. And you're allowed to do that from time to time in T20. And we expect so much of this guy. So that's the issue, I think, that Maxwell's expectation is the bar's so high because of the talent that he has. And we expect him to average 65. You know what? The bottom line is most cricketers average between 35 and 45. You know, so if we're going to get that expectation, he can play a role like Andrew Symonds has played. Comes in, wins a few games here and there, but he's not a banker. You know, your banker's got to be Ponting, Martin, Michael Clarke, you know, these guys that get you consistent 40 or 50.
So in the current team, who are the bankers for you that can do that?
Well, yeah, the banker's out at the moment. That's Steve Smith. But I think that Peter Hanscom's filled that spot in the one-day squad. Sean Marsh did it as well currently, but... Yeah, really hard to find. I'm a big believer in one-day cricket and T20, still having that glue at number four because it's such a tricky position to get right.
Well, it has been missing, hasn't it, because the record isn't great.
Absolutely.
And leading into a World Cup, you know, that sort of role is crucial, isn't it?
And I think there was a mistake, actually, from the management where Steve Smith actually got promoted to number three. He probably felt that he was the best player in the team and he wanted to move up, but... That critical role of, A, letting your openers get off to a good start because they know they've got quality at number four, and then setting up for your back-end team as well. I think that's critical. And one thing we've missed where we seem to have pushed harder than we should have, you know, pushing, trying to get totals of 300. But, you know, if you get to the 35th over and you're already 6-7 down, then you're under the pump. So, look, that's still an interesting factor about how that's going to work out, but I like.
Did you read anything into lads Hanscom in for Carey, and is that going to happen in the one day? Is Carey in real trouble?
I think
World Cup?
For me, it's either Hanscom or Matthew Wade. I didn't think that the partnership between Finch and Carey was a great one. Finchie hasn't got a run for the summer, which is not helping either, which probably reflects.
But hopefully if Warner can come in and get in form, that'll help Finch.
Yeah, I just think that, Carey for me.
He's carrying a lot, isn't he? Finchie is carrying a lot at the minute. Yeah, he keeps getting pad blown off. And as you know, if you get into those zones where, particularly against a particular bowler like Bumrah, you know, blowing off his pad all the time.
Well, he can't get away from him, Dottie. Yeah. This is a, for those people out there, there are matchups which you just don't like. And Finch to face Bumrah and Bhuvaneshwar Kumar in particular.
I reckon Bhuvie's the one.
It hurts him because he knows that he can either nick it off or get his pad blown off. So for Finchie, he just needs to escape India, get out of there, try and find another matchup somewhere in the World Cup and go and blast them and you'll be fine.
All right, let's try and get him out of there. Hey, yeah. Dottie, what about a man who did take 6 for on test debut but didn't punch out a 50 like you, Pat Cummins?
Yeah. He's got some improvement, hasn't he?
If he keeps improving... He's got a little bit.
Though, well, he would have got 50 if he didn't get 10 for in his first match.
Did he get man of the match, I think? Maybe that's the difference between him and Dottie, mate.
Yeah, I think so.
You disappointed that, well, why can't they recognise my significant contribution to this test match?
I'll tell you
Cummo
what, though.
Cummo has got a free ride. That's the headline. Dottermaid says Cummins got a free ride.
Sorry? Similar good looks as well, both similar good Cummins looks. And Dottermaid.
Would you like to see him with some facial hair? You used to rock the Errol Flynn sort of stuff.
No doubt. I think it
Were you a better player with the Mo or without Mo?
Ooh.
So for me, I liked the Tash Dottermaid Hodge.
Yep.
Wasn't there quite as intimidating as others around at the team at the time.
No, but it was a bit
It's very much Ron Jeremy porno type style, isn't it, when you have a look at it? That's got the helmet on, but...
I was going to go 1985 accountant. I reckon 90% of accountants in 1985 would have had a Tony Dottermaid mustache.
Okay, well, actually, speaking of jobs or accountancy, I was running through this particular Victorian cricket... publication, volume 5, number 2, December 1989.
So we've just changed that. This is actually the Retro Book Review, which is a magazine. Go, Hodge.
Okay, so in it, it's Cricket Computes for Tony. Now,
Compute.
Ken Peace, the master or 2 cent piece, however you want to refer to him.
He also wrote the brilliant this great book.
Author of this.
Brad Hodge, the little master. Can he actually
it's
steal
a very thin book,
master?
Though. Have you noticed that? It's actually very thin. What's that all
I
about?
I can't believe they wasted a tree on that anyway. back to this. I love this because it starts off in such. If Tony Dottermaid wasn't such a good cricketer, he'd be teaching or working in the fast advancing computer industry, but he wouldn't be liking it as much. For
That's
all
good
those computer
that.
Geeks out there, can you explain to them why cricket is a lot better than doing that shit?
Is that a question or is that just
It's a
that
question
out?
For Tony.
It was probably a pretty poor career choice at the time, considering where computing's gone to and where my career went to, really. But no, I did my degree at the time when I was starting off in Victoria was an applied science degree in computing was my sub-major.
Yeah, it does.
And did many teammates help you get through that? Like, Merv was very good.
I said, mate, I've got this issue with
Adams.
I've got this issue with my Fortran, you know, program at the mine. And he was very helpful.
He goes, give me a Bunsen burner. Because that was his science, year 8 science report, wasn't it?
It was definitely.
What did he say?
No, it was his, and this is God honest truth, that his report card for, was it Form 5? No, he didn't get that.
No.
Did he?
Year 8,
so year 8 science was potentially dangerous in the lab. That was the extent of his comments.
No,
okay, retro.
Apart
book
from
review.
A Bunsen burner. So Tony, it also says sitting in front of a VDU. Can you explain to me what a VDU is?
Video display unit.
Okay, yes. So sitting in front of a video display
that's
unit. Yes. Well done. I've no idea what it means. For 7 hours a day doesn't turn me on. What turns you on there? Because I'm pretty sure when I've known people to sit in front of computers for 7 hours. And it might be different content than what they're watching, but they can certainly make it pretty pleasurable.
Well, he's a hypocrite, Tony Dottermaid, because if he says, what, sitting in front of a screen for 7 hours doesn't interest me. What about the poor blokes that had to watch his 50 off 243 minutes on debut?
Well, that's 7 hours of
They've
boring shit, isn't
computer.
It?
What other little quotes in there, please?
There's some great stuff. He talks about also... Here it is. He's spending his winters with Sussex, having already been confirmed for 1990. Dodemaid prefers his full-time employment to centre family around cricket 12 months a year. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, as most motivational sportsmen, the self comes first and then the family go wherever you want. Yep. Looking at your resume, you've taken him to Sussex.
Yeah.
You've taken him to Lords. Yes, you've taken him to WA. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to work out there that in the court of law, this could be taken. This could be taken down. I reckon.
I'm also on my second wife, so that probably is. <'cause>
There you go. Boom.
That's probably a reason for that. Yeah.
There is. And just going back to Sussex. I love it down there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It was a good environment to learn things.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Did you learn down there in Sussex?
Well, there's only one man you learned from, wasn't there?
Well,
do you remember who it was?
There was a couple. Yeah, my coach at the time. Actually, there was quite a few people down there because remember John Snow, one of the great all-time England bowlers.
Legendary fast bowler John Snow.
He was down there, yes, and he was on the committee at that stage, so it was fortunate enough. But my coach at the time was a gnarly old left-arm spinner called Norman Gifford.
That's it.
He played a bit for England, and he was my coach at the time, and he was just, again, these mentors, some of these mentors.
Knew his cricket.
And he had these sort of, you know, little sayings, you know, and he had a pipe. He had a pipe going.
I never got coached by a guy with a pipe.
Yeah,
that would have been awesome.
He had a pipe going. You know? Yeah. He'd have these little sayings like, you never lose it, someone just adds in funny places.
And that's, what's your advice would he have given to Imran Khan?
Imran wasn't very good at taking advice, really. It was like, I'm just so handsome. And I'm a brilliant cricketer.
So he'd just say that?
The girls love me.
Didn't he ever be...
Well, he's now the president of Pakistan, of course.
The fast bowling cartel were doing these sort of things.
This is all very
and
much
you're part
fast.
Of it. Yeah. But didn't he have his own seat as well in the dressing room?
He did have his own seat. He did have his own seat. Up in the viewing room at Sussex where, you know, you look out over the game when you're waiting to bat. The big armchair in the corner was
Imran.
It was always in.
Did anyone ever try to sit in there?
Of course, the young players in the first time in the team, of course, the older players get upstairs, and Imran, of course, was still recovering from the night before, so he wasn't there early.
Mm.
But the young players would come up and they'd say, where do I sit? And they'd say, over there, in Imi's chair. Of course, when Imi got up there, it was just all hell broke loose.
Oh, he wouldn't be. So that cricket magazine, I think it was a freebie, Hodge. If you were trying to buy it these days, what would it go for? Especially if it's the Dodemaid
episode.
And
it's got the legendary John Scholes on the cover, unfortunately is no longer with us. I would say if you can get a copy of this, because it is a free publication.
It was.
So there must only be, back in 1999, probably five editions that have ever been produced. I'd say at least $7,500. If you can get your hands on one of these for $7,500,
I'd buy two.
Donate it to the MCC. You're going to make a lot of money So get a hold of that one.
Hey, boys, something I saw, you know, the Australia-India T20, it's becoming a trend. The team photo and Adam Zampa and Marcus Stoinis holding hands in the team photo. Dodders, you're flying. You've just taken five for Australia against Sri Lanka on debut. First Australian to do that. What happens if you had a team photo a couple of games later and you're sitting next to AB and you said, hey, AB, what about we hold hands for this photo? What would have been the reply?
Well, I was hoping for a handshake for 550 on debut.
Hmm.
There was no physical contact from AB, let alone a handshake.
No. Mind you, it was hard to get near him with Merv all over him at the time too. Just
well, he was the tongue in the ear. But that didn't become a trend, did it?
No.
Merv sort of started it and it sort of peaked and pretty much waned after he retired.
Yeah. Well,
maybe we're getting back to those days. Maybe this is a little introduction from Stoinis and Zamps.
Or maybe you get a game.
There's allowed to be love, isn't there?
I like it.
Yeah. This is in day and age.
I just thought we'd go back to your career and how it would have gone over with an Alan Border. What about a Ray Bright? Would he have been up for a bit of hold?
No, Spotty wasn't there. Spotty. Hold hands, man, either.
What are you doing? What are you doing? What about Shield cricket? The Vics had a really good victory. Three wickets. They chased down 300. Marcus Harris saying, best innings I've ever played, 174. Also, a bit of validation. I copped a bit of criticism over the Sun at the summer. Channel 7, each day's play, they're going, what's your gutsy call? And it was pretty obvious Marcus Harris is going to get 100. So on my 22nd time I've done it, guess what? The little fella's come through. So I feel a bit of validation. It was a gutsy call.
At first innings too, when he got very close and didn't hit it apparently.
Yeah, I thought I was not in trouble there. Tassie just absolutely smashed South Australia. Jakey Weatherall, good potential, 106. He would have thought like he'd saved the game. Jackson Bird, 7 for. They lost 6 for 3. So that was a really good victory, the Tassie. And New South Wales, they just overpowered WA.
Yeah.
Cam Bancroft,
of course, yes.
Runs, but Soko, Keith, Copeland and co.
Yeah.
Too good. So before you discuss your little thing, so I picked a Shield team of the round, okay? Mm-hmm. So my Shield team for the round is openings Harris. So we have 90 and 174.
You know, good enough.
Good enough. Confirmations of my gutsy calls, I thought. Burnsy, 60 and 80. So just keep just getting runs, Burnsy.
No, he's in good touch.
And he's over the top of Bancroft for you there.
Yeah. I'll get to that, Jake. To be honest.
Oh, no, sorry.
It was a disappointing round for middle order batsmen. Mm. It was a very good round for opening batsmen because I put Jakey Weatherald at 3.
Yeah.
1 and 160. But in that tells a bit of a story about Jakey because when he gets going, he's as good a batsman to watch in Australia, isn't he? He's just exhilarating with his hitting. We just want you to bridge your best days and your worst days. Just get those a little bit. Well, we don't want the best days coming down any. We want the worst days going up to there.
Yeah, he looks a little bit like Sean Marsh, doesn't he? In when you're out there and you're striking it, it just looks like perfection. And then when you're off, things just go horribly wrong for him. So he's when he was at the Adelaide Strikers, I thought that he was going to be easily in the top 5 run scorers. It didn't happen, but then he got the century in the final. This guy's a serious talent.
He got 100 in the Big Bash final last year, and then he can punch out 160 in Shield. So it's in him, and I reckon he's an excitement machine.
And his JLT one day form has particularly been strong over the last few years. So he'll put some pressure on for sure.
You think though, Hodgie, though, the really good players, when they're not playing that well, they're batting ugly but still getting runs.
Yeah, they do. They seem to scrape out a 20 or 30, and that's how you get a bank of 800 to 1,000 runs for a season instead of finishing off with 600. So that's what the good players do. And if Jay can find that, especially battling Adelaide Oval, I know it seems a little bit, but all in all, it's pretty good for batting.
Well, talking about Bangham, number 4, I got Banger in there, but it's really un-Banger. Cam Bancroft, isn't it? Because he batted for 8 days.
Yeah.
138 and 86. And if we just randomly went retro in test match cricket and go, hey, how about we just play a timeless test? That'd be fun. You know who's getting picked first? It's Umbanger.
Yeah.
Umbanger Bancroft.
Well,
he bat the whole test.
I mean, I'm not sure if there was any sledging out there. I'm pretty sure there would have been. But they would have been calling him Pujara. For sure, even though he doesn't average 50 in test match cricket, and Pujara does, but it's stuff like this which bores the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And, I quickly turn the TV or radio off when I hear this sort of laborious cricket. Yeah. So for me...
You and Mark Waugh.
Yeah.
You and Junior.
So for me...
Great forward defence, though, which I like.
Yeah.
I'll question his forward defence. I reckon it's a bit of an angle bat. I reckon there's gaps for Anderson to work through. It's not as good as Dodamade's or Gillespie's.
I'll be straight up. Anderson won't be seeing him for ever.
You don't reckon Bancroft will play? Go on the Ashes?
Nope.
Okay, we're going to get to that because I want you. That's your segment. Well done to Umbanger. He might be my favourite batsman at the moment. Kurt Patterson. Do you know what I'm liking? Questions. Oh, I couldn't get hundreds. Get starts, mate. He's getting hundreds. He's hundreds are trending with KP. And there's a bit of Alistair Cook about his batting too. The bat looks really, really broad. So another 100 to him. So KP, don't worry about the bash or T20 cricket. Just nick it off. Don't even think about it. Just make 25 test hundreds, please. What about Maddo? Nick Bannerton.
Mm.
He couldn't have looked worse at the Big Bash. And we know he's probably rushed, after the broken elbow or whatever from Jai Richardson. Stars lost a few players to the one-day team. And really, he just couldn't get going in the Bash. So that's a real tick to be able to now punch out, which is consecutive hundreds. That's I think they're 3 months apart. But Maddo, you're trending in red ball cricket.
Yeah. Well, I reckon it's fantastic, actually, because the one thing is about Sheffield Shield cricketers, you do have time to adapt and adjust your game. And with the fast pace of T20 cricket, it's more about thought than it is technique. Here he would have had a time to go and hone his technique a week before the Sheffield Shield starts, concentrate on his simple technique, and he's delivered it. This is a guy that's played Test cricket, you know, that we need to keep in the back of our mind for sure.
Just a bit early for me. I still haven't – it's too soon. I saw those four innings in Test match cricket. I just need a bit more time before Nick
– No, I think he got selected too soon.
Yeah, he did.
Average selection.
I love his comments too afterwards where – is, you know, we had to leave the game when he was in New South Wales just to deal with a few issues. And the messages were out that he's not putting pressure on himself. He's enjoying his cricket again. And he sort of seems to be in a good space.
And you know why he's enjoying his cricket? You know why he's getting
I know why.
He's got the Tony Dottomade tash.
Correct. And
don't shave that off. He did. And look what happened to Dottie.
He went downhill.
He had to build the Junction
and
Oval.
50 and 6 for and then...
He had to go to England, this bloke.
Wow. You got to make... It's better than watching videos for 7 hours, according to Tony, so it's good.
I remember that 243 minutes for that 50 as well. Nifty Nev. Wadey's unlucky, but he didn't play as a keeper, but I no doubt you'll talk about Wadey. Well done, Nev. 100, Nifty's back. At 8, Sock, 9 wickets. Is he the second Ashes spinner? Left-arm orthodox. Copes, 6 wickets.
Yep.
Is he an Ashes smoky? Swepson, 9 wickets. He's having an okay Shield year. Is he the second Ashes spinner, taking the count leg spins history over there in the UK? And number 11, Jackson Bird with a bullet. 11 wickets. Action Jackson. I'd be making sure that my passport wasn't expiring if I was Jackson. Mm. So that's my 11, Hotch. Now, for you... for this round, I want you to, in line with what I said about Birdie, who should be making sure that their passport is updated?
Well, I think for me, updating your passport as smoky as Maddison. Yeah, just for that left-hander in the middle.
Scores quick.
Don't mind it. The other one is Michael Nissa. Even though he didn't have such a good round, I think that this guy can actually be a true all-rounder in the game of cricket, a bowling all-rounder.
You know what he's averaging?
Swings the ball.
You know what he's averaging in Shield cricket this year?
Yeah, 45, 50.
60. 550s.
Well, it's better than whole top water of Australia. So, Michael Nissa, I want him to keep his passport updated.
I would think he'd bowl well in England,
For me, Steve O'Keefe, you've just stamped your passport and booked your ticket. And the reason being is that left-arm orthodox, if you don't have the quality of Shane Warne, or McGill, even though he didn't get picked in the last game of the 2005 Ashes series. For me, left arm creates a lot more doubt because, you get that little pancake outside the line of the left-hander, so you can bring in bat pads offside, and you're always hitting the stumps. So for me, Steve O'Keefe should partner Nathan Lyon in that Ashes series.
Probably at the Oval. Are they your ones? Your ones, make sure your passports.
And also Matthew Wade.
Yes.
So I've got Matthew Wade in there. I think that he definitely needs to keep his passport ready, not only for the Ashes, but also for India as
And do you agree with
Bird
for me?
Keeper, or as much as a batter?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. I don't want to put any pressure on the captain of Australia, but performance has come down to it. And he's a great keeper, but Matthew Wade, the feedback that he had was, you have to go and work on your batting, but also your keeping. I think he's ticked that box. So, you know, now you're talking about a wicketkeeper batting in your top six. Why can't he just pick a wicketkeeper batsman for Australia? And I'm not sure in all forms of the game whether it works with two keepers in there. England have done it. But for me, I'd like to see him get back into the one-day side. And then possibly there's still a long future for Matthew Wade.
I think he's got to be close to be playing white ball cricket in the World Cup. For me. I still, even if Hanscom goes over Carey with the gloves, I think Wade's just got the genuine power we need. If you bat him, I mean, he's open and got hundreds for Australia,
but it's
seven. We need a seven who's going to bang him. And Hanscom's, you know, Smith might take Hanscom's role. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Hey, mate, what about who are the unfortunates? It's only one round.
Yep.
We'll be probably watching their footy team.
Yeah, I've got Renshaw in there.
Yep.
Yep. I'm not sure whether he's a Brisbane Lions fan or Gold Coast
Suns. I think
he's
going to play county cricket, but the theme is...
He can go and watch Tottenham Hotspur there, wherever he's playing. But he'll be definitely...
The Broncos.
There's a lot of raps on him, but just hasn't delivered. Labuschagne for me as well. Sit back and enjoy some footy.
He might be
for
a Super
14s
fan.
He might be, being a South African descendant.
The Reds.
Yep. And unfortunate, but Carey as well. I think go and watch your Gold Coast, I mean the Suns. No, he played the Giants. Sorry, Giants.
I think he's a Crows man now, though.
Yeah, because I think for me, Matthew Wade takes that 15th spot as a wicketkeeper batsman there. And Jackson Bird, sort of been there, done that.
Okay.
Have a rest, because I'm picking Copeland before Jackson Bird.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Dodd, you got any thoughts on that Copeland versus Bird?
I'm a fan of both of them. I think they're both. Copes is a tremendous professional. He's a really good professional now, and he's. But I like Jackson. I reckon Jackson has hit that sort of bowling. When he was last in the team, he probably just didn't have the edge of hurrying the shots and playing that. Of course, he played the Boxing Day test.
Oh, and that's flat. Imagine getting picked for that one, Dodd. You'd be spewing, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. I just like Bird. Copes played a couple of test matches, but Birdie has shown that he can get wickets at test match level. And you're coming in. I don't think either will be long-term players. Mm. You're bringing them in to help you win a test match.
Mm. Yeah.
I think they're
sort of
that Sid's type of role,
isn't it? The ones that
there's only one of them.
Really experienced player, seamer, that can, in the right conditions.
One of them has to go.
Yeah.
So I've got to run. So, Tony, you're staying on with the great fast bowlers, the two opening bowlers of... What's the Shield? You did open the bowling together in the Shield, didn't you?
Against New South Wales.
We both got some wickets, I think.
Who is that against? Taylor and Slater?
No, they were in the West Indies, weren't they? And Paul Rifle.
Mark O'Neill.
Thoyster.
Well, they would have been licking their lips at you two.
Buzz McMahon.
Kevin Roberts played that game?
I don't know about that. He might have been a bit young.
Buzzard was here.
But no, we may reminisce about that. Hodgie, we'll save up the social media self-promoter for next week.
We'll do.
One of the great... test match series wins of recent time, maybe ever, is Sri Lanka are beating South Africa. Well, they've beaten them in the series.
They have
already.
It's a series win. And is it the first Asian team to win a series down there?
I would have thought so. I couldn't imagine. Like their record is amazing. You know, of losing, they've lost to Australia and maybe England. And that might be about it.
Well, that's it. I mean, at the time, they've been on this sort of world tour, haven't they? They were smashed in New Zealand. They came to Australia, and as Brad said, they looked like a fourth 11 team from and looked demoralised, completely demoralised. And then lost their captain, the chairman of selectors, whatever, go to South Africa, which you think has got to be one of the hardest tours in world cricket, particularly when you're coming off a trip of already existing
floggings.
Floggings in New Zealand and Australia. And to come and, you know, Dale Steyn and Rabada, they didn't spare them either.
Philander?
Absolutely peppering them. And to come back with a win like that, what an amazing innings from, was it Pereira?
Well, Fernando that was in the first test match, which may go down as the greatest test innings of all time. You know, Wisden often will come out and they'll calibrate, don't they, their own sort of things. Mm. But that would certainly be in the top 10 against the attack and what he'd already done in his career or hadn't done. But then another guy, you know, Fernando stepped up. That's massive for him. I mean, we've seen the best of Mendes a couple of times. You know, he made a great 100 last time the boys went over there. Mm. But, you know, that South Africa going that second inning still would have thought, we'll knock him over here.
Oh, no doubt.
So it's resilience, isn't it? Yeah.
The attack that they've got, particularly Dale Steyn, who's, you know, one of the all-time greats. Rabada as well. You know, it's... And the pressure of South Africa, you know what they can be like. You know,
yeah.
It's just absolutely, you know, the real pack mentality.
So they've talked about now South Africa already doing reviews, that complacency stepped in, which can happen. But for me, a lot of it, using calibrate again, calibrates by the next test match. Mm. So that, I think this is even more surprising that they could actually back it up, show resilience and just outplay South Africa.
Absolutely. And it is that group that, you know, they've been through so many hard times together. That, you know, kind of a binding effect, can't it? If you're just going to say, right, boys, you know, there's nothing worse that can go wrong. Let's just enjoy it, pull together, and see if we can do something special. Enjoy each other's company.
So they've had no Matthews, Angelo Matthews. Their last two captains aren't there, are they? And Chandamol's not there. Mm. Harath had just retired.
Yep.
So that's a three out of your 11 experience wise.
It's an all time great performance, isn't it?
What do you read about this is becoming a big scenario for South African cricket is Dwayne Oliver, who's 26-year-old, had a promising start to his test career. He's got 48 test wickets in 10 test matches.
Yeah.
26, and he's decided to sign with the Yorkshire.
Well, there are a few dimensions here, aren't there? I mean, I've seen a lot of him bowl, I must say, but it's there's a couple of things, special considerations for those South Africans, isn't there? Because of the Coal Pack opportunity, so the Coal Pack for the opportunity for South African players, because they've got a trade agreement there to actually play in England, not as an overseas player, a non-qualified for England, but still a non-overseas player. And of course, the difference between the pound and the rand there is compelling. But also the other dimension to it, which I reminded as I was coming in, was that there are still these quotas in South African cricket, and so there's generally supposed to be 6 players of colour in any team of 11, which of course only leaves 5 places for like white South Africans.
And so if you're the second best spinner or third best quick, you could go from the test team and not playing for your
absolutely
state team.
And also there's some injuries at the moment, isn't there? I think Philander's been injured recently, and he only got his chance because a few of those probably people in front of him were injured. So he weighs all that up and thinks, well, actually, how much, even though I've been offered a 2-year contract for South Africa in Rand, and now I've got this opportunity to perhaps establish myself in county cricket and play for the next 10 years.
Yes.
You know, it's a tough thing on South African cricket, but they've got in those circumstances, you've got to say, well, okay, you know, you can understand the decision.
And I think there's 40 South African players playing in English county cricket, 10
Riley
from Rousseau, the West Indies.
Riley Rousseau was playing there. It was Kyle Abbott. He left and
played. He's a great bowler. He's a great bowler. Yep. So, but I'm thinking, I'll be interested to see the fallout of this 26-year-old making that decision, a frontline pick. Whether we see some reaction from South African cricket with their structures to make sure, because, you know, it's a big test to keep punching out that talent, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it costs a lot, as we know, you know, being in the system, you as well, that, you know, the high-performance system is a very expensive thing, and you're there to produce players, and when you get someone of rare talent like that, you've invested a lot of time and money and attention into them. Just to have them go off, it'd be heartbreaking.
What about, and also news from Sri Lanka, Sunil Jayasuriya has been banned for 2 years for not providing information. I mean, they had an amazing, a month or two ago where there was 2 weeks where you could offer information, you know, free of retribution or whatever there.
Yeah.
You know, to think that you've actually, your country's cricket's got to that stage is horrible.
Yeah.
Great performances from the current team, but they're going to have to clean all this up, haven't they?
It is. And look, I guess there have been murmurings and questions about Sri Lankan cricket over the journey and, you know, probably other Asian countries as well. But look, it's a horrible... And even in that sort of environment, it's even... That achievement in South Africa is even more so when all this is swirling around the team. But unfortunately there, where there is a system, it's very much the tentacles of government are in there as well. You know, it's a very political system over there. And unfortunately for someone like Sanath, who, let's face it, he's an absolutely world-class player, one of the greats of the game. There's a backstory here which we'll probably never know.
Yep, it doesn't help your legacy, I don't think, does it? It's just got that little mark next to it. Hey, what about the Aussie women?
Fantastic.
You know, so 2-0 up in the series, last game on Sunday here, but Elise Perry's batting. Yeah, it was the first 100 in one day international, but her summer's, it's off the rails, how many runs she's made.
She's off the charts, isn't she? Absolutely off the charts. And I was actually surprised, I'd forgotten that it was, she hadn't made a one day international 100 after a double 100 in the Ashes last year in the test match. And she's just on fire. And to have that, the depth of talent that they've got in the team at the moment, I mean, on Sunday, and if you're going down to the Junction Oval, I recommend going down and having a look at these girls, but also look out for Meg Lanning, because Meg, she's missed out twice, and she will have a game face on Sunday, and she'll want to hurt the bowlers.
That's a bit of a concern, isn't it?
But shout out too for young Soph Molyneux, who I know she's out with a shoulder injury at the moment. She'll be a superstar player for Australia for a lot of years. Young player from Gippsland, now established herself not only in the Victorian team but in the Australian team, but she's missing at the moment, but I think she'll do great things out of the gym.
So definitely. So let's make it three, Neil, for the Aussie girls. So well done there. Interesting. So Chris Lynn's chosen the IPL over, you know, trying to push for the World Cup. I'm not totally surprised by that. You know, I think there's, you know, I'd imagine for Lenny, I don't think he has a lot of trust in his body.
I don't think,
you know, 50 over cricket, he may make himself available like he did for the JLT if everything's going well.
Yeah.
But you think, with every time he goes to field the ball, there's a potential shoulder injury waiting, isn't it?
You hold your breath every time he goes near the pill, and you know, he won't dive now in the field, so clearly he's restricted in the field as well. And look, I'm with you, I'm not surprised that he's saying, well, I need to optimise my value now.
Yeah.
Because he's one injury away from possibly not playing again. So that doesn't surprise me either.
Hey, Dottie, that's it. Thanks a lot for joining us on the Bowlology Report. Just to finish, I mean, you're one of numerous cricketers that have gone to Harvard to study. Was it funny being over there and bumping into teammates like Merv Hughes and Rodney Hogg? Who'd you catch up with? Colin Miller? Funky?
Funk, I expected maybe to see.
Yeah.
The right continent. Yep. The right continent for Funk. He's down there at he's Los Angeles. He's down there in LA at the moment.
He's in LA?
Las Vegas, actually. He's in Las Vegas,
sorry. Tweet into you.
Yeah, no, he's one of the all-time great men as well. I went to kindergarten with Colin Miller. There you go.
There's a little trivia to finish off here.
Trivia thing. But no, I didn't run into Funk at Harvard, alongside the university town there. But it was brilliant. It's brilliant being there.
Yeah, so Funky actually said that, asked Dottie about when he hurt his bat on the morning of a Shield game while sitting on the toilet. Does that make sense? Because someone sort of refuted that one. Yeah. It might have been someone else.
No, that wasn't me. I did hurt my back in the warm-up of a Shield game and had to miss
and
it.
Out.
And out for the game. Totally innocent. It was just in a stretch and I had to go to the chiro. But I think a chap by the name of Len Balcombe might have...
Fiery sure Len. Was he at Harvard? No.
No, I think...
Footscray boy?
I think he was probably with Merv at the time and they got lost. Probably around Las Vegas somewhere, I think.
Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas!
Hey, Dottie, thanks a lot for joining. Legend, the old man pro for Victoria over 100 games... but equally a legend for what you did for various cricket associations around the world, but more in particular, Cricket Victoria. Every time I walk into the Junction Oval, I just think, thank God for Tony Dottomade.
Name, Anthony Ian Christopher Dottomade. Born the 5th of October 1963, age 53. Williamstown, Victoria, Australia. Nicknamed Dodders. Height 6 feet 2 and 1.88 metres. Batting style, right-handed. Bowling style, right arm, fast medium. National
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.